Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 93 Sutra 2131 Vikaranatvan Neti Chen Tad Uktam Vikaranatvat, on account of the absence of instruments of action and perception. Na, not, iti thus, chet, if, tat, that, objection. Uktam answered. If one objects that the Lord cannot be the creator because he has no senses, the answer has already been stated. Sutra Prakashika. To the opponent's view of the Lord having no senses, the Sutrakara refutes by explaining that, one, the Lord's senses are not limited to one functionality, but he can perform the task of other senses with any other senses. Two, that his senses are non-material. The Lord, who is the possessor of innumerous shaktis, is all-pervading, along with his senses, and hence is the creator. This is the verdict of the scriptures. Footnote 41. Srila Jiva Goswami comments that the Lord has senses, including his arms, which support them, but also describe the Lord as akarana, without senses, since he does not have senses like the jiva. Why? He exists by his sarup, which manifests his senses through his sarup shakti, swarata. They cannot be called senses like those of the jiva, since they arise from his sarup. That is, what is the proof of existence of these surup shaktis, is the doubt. You give the sense organs and their shaktis to all beings. Akila karana shakti daraha. Since you maintain the senses in those beings, this means that those shaktis are self-accomplished, complete and indestructible in you. Pranasya pranam uta chakshusas chakshuhu. You are the prana of the prana and the eye of the eye, Kena Upanishad. Svabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. The Lord possesses natural shaktis of jnana, bala, and kriya. Sweta Sarupa Upanishad 6-8. Within the body of Mahavishnu resides clusters of millions of universes composed of three planetary systems. By the Lord's senses, the action and knowledge senses of the jivas arise. From his expansion, antaryami, the knowledge of the jiva arises. From his prana, the physical and sensual strength and action of the jivas arise. He is the final cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction through the three gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.4. Vikananatvan neti ched tad uktam. If one objects that the Lord cannot be the creator because he has no senses, the answer has already been stated. Vedanta Sutra 2.1.31. Shrutestu shabda mulatvat. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable subjects. Vedanta Sutra 2.1.27. Right, so the defects of the agent means the jiva. The defects they have in their senses, that doesn't apply to the Supreme Lord. Right? That's the principle. And so, yeah, and the scriptural statements on how to understand this, then we have to accept from scripture, because they can only explain things that don't make sense to us logically. Right? Because our logic is limited to the material, so we can't understand beyond that. Yeah? So then we have to depend upon scripture. According to this, the Shruti statements are beyond material logic. The Lord is thus endowed with senses and has no senses. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. Like for us, they're mechanical senses. For him, they're just part of his Swarup Shakti. Right? So they're not like our senses, because our sense can do one function if it's connected to the Lord's, to the Lord. Then it'll function. But with the Lord, each sense can do whatever he likes. It's not that it's limited, because it's his Swarup Shakti. So they're all interchangeable, as he pleases. Right? So, and he is the cause of our senses working. So just because we have a defect, doesn't mean he has to have that defect. Natasya karayam karanam cha vidyate. The Lord does not have senses or actions. Sweta Sartara Upanishad 6.8. Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda 50.
Maharaj, there Gyan, Bala and Kriya, which is mentioned, is it corresponding to Ichha, Gyan and Kriya, which we hear?
You'd have to, I can't say here, because Gyan and Kriya are there, but Bala generally means strength. So I kind of get the idea here you're talking about, because Gyana and Bala are two aspects. Those are Shankarshan. Right? You know, at the same time as then you have the aspect that Shankarshan is doing the Kriya. I mean, you know Baladev is doing the Kriya. And Gyana is by Vasudev. So, that means, Mahanarayan there. So, and then Krishna's above that. So, these are what he uses to fulfill his desire. So, it doesn't necessarily, we're talking about action and senses here. So, it doesn't necessarily have to include the Icha here. Like that. You know, does that make sense? So, you understand that there is these, the action, means the, how do you call it? That there's there's the basis for action and action itself. So I think that seems to be what this is bringing up.
I mean, implicitly it's there because desire means Ichha. To fulfill the Ichha of Lord, then these Gyan and Bala.
Yes, that's what it was meaning. At the same time, there may be some more deeper understanding to it, so. You know, how it's being applied. Okay. Siddhanta, Govindavasya, Siddhanta. If one argues that Brahman cannot be the creator, since he has no senses, the answer has already been given in the verse you quoted showing that he has no senses. The same passage later shows that the Lord has natural supreme shaktis. It is said, Kam Ishvaranam Paramam Maheshwaram, Tam devatanam paramam cha daivatam. Patim patinam paramam parastad vidhama devam bhuvanesham idyam. We know the worship of a Lord, ruler of the world, the great Lord, supreme among controllers, supreme devata among devatas, the masters of masters greater than the great. Natasya karayam karanam cha vidyate. Natad samas cha bhyadikaras cha drishyate parashya shaktir vibhidhaya shruyate svabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. He has no body and no senses. No one is equal to him or higher. His supreme power is manifold. He has intrinsic knowledge, strength, and action. Natasya kaschit patir asti loke nateshtita naiva chatasya lingam Sakaranam karanadi padipo nachasya kaschid janita nachadhipaha. He has no master or ruler in this world. He has no mark to distinguish him. He is the cause, the rulers of the senses. He has no father or ruler. Sweetasara Upanishad 6:7-9. In the original verse quoted, it was stated that although the Lord has no feet and hands, senses, he is still capable of action like moving and grasping. In response to doubters, these verses reiterate the truth. He is in the position of the great person because he controls all persons. He does not have a material body or material senses. This is understood through the use of the word cha in the phrase natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. He has superior or spiritual shakti, parasya shaktihi. That shakti is natural, svabhaviki, related to his sarup. His knowledge, strength, and actions are also related to his sarup. Because others lack such qualities, no one is equal, no one is superior to him. Thus, though devoid of material senses, since he is endowed with senses related to his sarup, there is no obstacle to his performing actions. Others explain the verse as follows. The verse does not really say that the Lord does not have senses, since it is stated he can still move and grasp. The statement merely denies that each sense is restricted to a particular function. Example, foot for moving, hand for grasping, etc. Since the following is also said, sarvatah pani padam tat sarvato kshi kshiro mukham sarvatah shruti mal loke sarvam avritya tishtati. Everywhere are his hands and feet. Everywhere are his eyes, head, and mouth. Everywhere are his ears. Extending everywhere he stands. Sri Sattara Upanishad 3:16 and footnote 42. Then, everywhere his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the Supersoul exists, pervading everything. Bhagavad Gita 13:14. Srila Prabhupada comments. As the sun exists, diffusing its unlimited rays, so does the Supersoul, or Supreme Personality of Godhead. He exists in his all-pervading form, and in him exist all the individual living entities, beginning from the first great teacher, Brahma, down to the small ants. There are unlimited heads, legs, hands, and eyes, and unlimited living entities. All are existing in and on the Supersoul. Right, they're all existing within because he encompasses everything, but they're still on because their functions happen, because they're based on his potency. Therefore, the Supersoul is all-pervading. The individual soul, however, cannot say that he has his hands, legs, and eyes everywhere. That is not possible, right? Even if he's spends all day on social media, still, it's not possible. If he thinks that under ignorance, he is not conscious that his hands and legs are diffused all over, but when he attains to proper knowledge, he will come to that stage, his thinking is contradictory. This means that the individual soul, having become conditioned by material nature, is not supreme. The supreme is different from the individual soul. The supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. The individual soul cannot. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that if anyone offers him a flower or a fruit or a little water, he accepts it. If the Lord is a far distance away, how can he accept things? This is the omnipotence of the Lord. Even though he is situated in his own abode, far, far away from earth, he can extend his hand to accept what anyone offers. That is his potency. In the Brahma Samhita 5:37, it is stated, Goloka eva nivasatya kilatma bhutaha. Although he is always engaged in pastimes in his transcendental planet, he is all-pervading. The individual soul cannot claim that he is all-pervading. Therefore, this verse describes the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead, not the individual soul. Right? So then if it's a matter of, no, but we could become like that when we come to that stage, but he's already like that. So what's the need of us becoming like that if we're already him? Right? So if it's an illusion, we think we're separate, then the point is then we don't exist at all. So that's the whole point. They're actually voidous. But then if we don't exist at all, what's the whole point anyway? Why make all this endeavor? Right? And, or from another angle, if you're looking at, but if he has all these arms and legs and he can do all this because he's transcendentally situated, you know, that would mean then he's a person. He has qualities. He can do all these things. If we come to the transcendental position, why do we have to merge into him? Why would we apply the impersonal at that point? If he's a transcendental person, why wouldn't we be a transcendental person? Right? So the relationship then naturally remains. Because he's always like that. We're not. So we're subservient.
Why they claim that if he doesn't have senses, he cannot create? I mean, he has to do it with his hands?
I guess they're thinking because when we do things, we have to use our senses. So since the material world, if it's created, then you have to have senses to do that. You know? But at the same time, is because it's material, then that means you'd have to have material senses. So that's why the Upanishad says he has no senses. It means they're not material. Or he doesn't have senses like we have. His senses are transcendental. They function differently. They're the natural form of his energy, while our senses are separate from us, created by the material energy. So in that way, he doesn't have these senses. Right? You know, it'd be like saying, you know, that the person, let's say, the gentleman in England, he does not have an ambassador. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a car. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's a matter of appreciating that it's not like this. Because ours are senses created by the material energy, but his senses aren't. So if you're defining senses like ours, he doesn't have senses. But the principle of senses that he has, but they're coming from his own potency, and our senses are based on his. So ours only work when they're connected to his. So, yeah. So this is all simultaneously one and different.
It appears that impersonalism and voidism are just they're trying to avoid their eternal position of being serving.
Yes. Because when we say envy and fear, that means envy of your relationship with the Lord. They don't want to have a relationship with the Lord in subservience. They want to be God. That's why they want to say, okay, then if this world is created with senses, then that would mean the Lord has to have those senses. Then we're the same. So when I become transcendental, then I'll become the Lord. But then if you become the Lord, then you have material senses, so what's the point? So it doesn't make sense what they're trying to do. They're trying to equate the living entity with God. But from that thing of that they're the controller and therefore the enjoyer. Well, we're trying to equate that we have common qualities, but we're the servant, he's the master. Yes, a slightly different approach. The individual soul cannot... The individual soul cannot claim that he is all-pervading. Therefore, this verse describes the supreme soul, the personality of Godhead, not the individual soul. No, that was from before, okay. It is also said in Smriti, Angani yasya sakalendriya vriti manti. All his limbs perform the function of all the senses. Brahma Samhita. This is also seen when Krishna ate food with his friends in the forest. Natasya karyam karanam. In this interpretation means that the Lord has no goal to accomplish, karyam, since he is complete and thus performs no actions, karanam, to accomplish that goal. The rest of the verse has the same meaning. Bhagavatam verse reference. Right? Does that make sense? If you have nothing to accomplish, you have nothing to do. But at the same time, you can do. That's the whole all these things. Yes. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-28. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The demigods and material nature herself are your tribute, offer you tribute, while also enjoying the tribute offered to them by their worshippers. Just as subordinate rulers of various districts in a kingdom offer tribute to their lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid to them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Footnote 43. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks that the Supreme Lord is the possessor of spiritual senses that renders the jiva's material senses functional. You are devoid of relationship with material senses of the jiva, since it is impossible to mix spiritual with material. You possess power to do anything because you are independent, Swarat, shining with your special Shakti. By your Shakti, you give the jiva power to operate his senses. Or you are devoid of material action, Karanaha, such as making a pot. You possess the power of all the elements, karaka, used in creation. You start the creation by your will alone, because you are independent of others. You shine with your own shakti, thus all jivas are dependent on you. Or, you are devoid of material senses of the jiva, since you have a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. There's no distinction of body and possessor of body and senses in the Lord, right? So if there's no difference between, there's no soul and body, because we have soul bodies, therefore then within the body there's senses. But because for Krishna, then him and his body are non-different, so therefore the senses are non-different. So in that way you can say there's no senses, it's just him. Right?
In the spiritual body, when we get to the spiritual world by Krishna consciousness, we also won't have the distinction between the body and the senses?
No. Why, you want a distinction?
No, I want to make sure.
But it's all happening by the Lord's grace through his shaktis. That's the whole thing. It's this principle of us being dependent on the Lord is always there. It's not that when they come to the transcendental that they're not dependent anymore. They're always dependent.
Can we say that the senses in this sense here are material and dead matter, even though subtle, and only by Krishna's potency they work through demigods?
Yes. Yeah, so they do the functions like they would in the spiritual world, but not on the same platform. Because the amount they're perceiving, the effect you get from it is very minimal. You know, it's there. You know.
So it's the same aspect of Pradyumna that enters, as we said in the creation, nothing was attracted to each other?
I would think so. Because then there still have to be the sense of sense objects that attract an element. Because Pradyumna is also then, when you can also, means generally you look at it, Sankarsha Pradyumna and Sambandha. Then Vasudeva is Abhideya and Prayojana is Aniruddha. So then Vasudeva, in performing the actions, then he's using the qualities of the other three. Right? So the two, the qualities of Sankarsha, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Because when you're doing something, you have to have the knowledge, you have to have the identity, you have to have the attitude, then you have to have the goal. Then you can actually perform action. Like that. But then you also have where then you're looking at it where the Sankarshan will take care of Sambandha, Prajumna, Abhideya, and Aniruddha will take care of Prayojana. Because Prajumna is in control of the senses. Right? And so then the senses are being engaged, that's action. When you engage the senses, there's action. Right. So then those three are in that position, and why are those there? To please Krishna or Vasudeva. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, these things are there, the mechanics are there, but at the same time he's beyond that. Because when we say Prayojana, we'll take it as a goal. But the secondary goal technically is not the Icha. It's the expression of prema. So it's beyond the result gained. Right? It's the experience Krishna will get from interacting with the devotees based on love in that situation. You understand? So that in that way, then Vasudeva is beyond. Does that make sense? Yes?
I just didn't understand the differentiation between Icha and Prema in this regard.
Means his desire is what is the cause of all things happening. But mechanically, that they're happening, that's being carried out by Kriya.
That's always like that.
Yes. But what was meaning is that even you're getting results, physical results, or certain emotional results of qualities being manifest or things like that, those are only there for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. So that's why when we say Aniruddha is Prayojana, then in this case we're talking the Prayojana meaning that you have attained something from your action.
Yes.
Means the actions of Prajumna based on the knowledge of Shankarshan produces results in Aniruddha. But the experience of that by Vasudev is beyond that, because it's the prema. You understand? So depending upon which aspect you're taking, then you're going to define them. They're all connected in this way. But you, as you get finer and finer, then you see, it's just like Mother Jashoda, she has attraction for Krishna, that particular rati, Vatsalya rati. So she expresses that through, like, cooking for Krishna and making clothes, giving him a bath, taking, you know, all these different things. But those technically are the secondary to her affection. You know what I'm saying? So as you get into something, it breaks down again. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that otherwise we may take it that, oh, if I do this activity, get this result, that's what's pleasing to Krishna. No, it's that you've done it to please him that pleases Krishna. Right? So there's always this aspect that it's got to be about that. So when we're talking about general, yeah, I'm doing this to please Krishna. So I'm getting that result to please Krishna. So then you would count it as one thing. But technically you can separate between what you've obtained by your endeavor and the offering of that to Krishna. Right? So then sometimes you get too mechanical and you're just doing the thing, get the result, and you're not satisfied. That's because the devotional aspect was not prominent. You understand? So you can break it down like that. So then in these, then they can break down in different ways. Yeah. Or you are devoid of material senses of the jiva, since you have a form of eternity. We did that. No, we didn't. Knowledge and bliss. There is no distinction of body and possessor of the body and senses in the Lord. Thus it is said, Apani Padaha. The Lord has no hands and feet, right? Because it's just him. But as a person, you see, he has hands and feet. But they're not like us, where they're separate. For Krishna, they're not separate.
Not so, separate in a sense?
They're not something else other than him. They're just him.
No, I understand that our hands and legs are separate because we have the soul.
Yeah, because we're not the body. But he is his body. Right? So that's the thing we'll say. We're not the body, so I can do whatever I like. But Krishna is his body, and he likes to do things in a certain way. So it's not going to fly. You have senses superior to that of the devas. Those are the devas. Though your senses cannot be separated from your body, they have all excellence. Thus, you are independent. Some Vaishnavas consider difference in the Lord's body and senses. The devas like Brahma and Shiva, Animishaha, make offerings to you, Udvahanti, and enjoy them completely, Samadanti. It is not like mere minor kings offering tribute to the ruler and enjoying without fear their independence for a short time. Brahma and others are always fearful, Chakita. Right? They're always, because that relationship with the Lord, they have to follow the Lord's rule. So understand, we're clear here on how the senses. He has no senses, but he has. Right? That's why he can create. But his senses aren't like our senses. You know, that we're entangled. His senses are him. And so he's not distracted by himself. He's transcendental, so his senses are transcendental. So applying his internal potency is not a distraction. Okay, then Sutra 2, 132. Na prayo jana vat. Oh, prayo jana vat. Na, not prayojana vat. Being endowed with a motive. The Lord is not suitable for creation because he has no goal, right? Because now they're just taking another part. They're trying to prove it by this. We've given some other thing that he has nothing to perform, no goal. Therefore, he performs no action. So, therefore, see, he's not suitable.
it.
Yeah. Sutra Prakashika. The opponent's view is expressed as follows. Sri Govinda Bhasya, Purva Paksha. The word na, not, is carried from the last sutra. The sutra is the compound na prayojanav vat vat, instead of the usual payojanavat vat. The action to create is not suitable for the Lord. Why? Because he has no goal in doing that, since he is complete already. Right? In this world, we see that people act for themselves and others. In the case of the Lord, he cannot act for himself, since this would contradict the Shruti statements that the Lord is fully satisfied. He cannot create the world on behalf of others, because he should act to show mercy to others. Since he should act to show mercy to others, not give various pains such as birth and death. Right? Because they're taking it that their happiness, if you give them happiness, that's mercy. And if they get pain and suffering, then that's a problem. Right? If the Lord creates the world without any goal, it would mean he acts without consideration. This would contradict Shruti, which says he has all knowledge. Therefore, Brahman is not suitable to create the world. Right? Because their idea is that I should be happy here. Right? But because they don't understand the personal form, the relationship of the soul as a person with the Lord, and that being based on bhakti, or devotion, they can't understand what the purpose of the world is. Right? We've come here to enjoy, so they still have that mentality. And so they're not enjoying, so their whole point is, why would God make it this way? Right? Brahman, why would he make it this way? Because if he did, that's inconsiderate. Right? So, therefore, then their point is that he wouldn't have made this.
And who would?
That's what then they're trying to go back to, is either the Jivas have made it, Pradhan has made it, somebody else has made it, but Brahman has not made it. Right? That's the whole point. Right? Because this is suffering, they want to get beyond this. So if the Lord's doing it is all that, then either that means then you're still connected with the whole idea. If you want to enjoy separately, you end up still here. You know, it's like the what do you call it? The prisoner? No, it was there. Every time he would escape, he would be somewhere else, even in another country. Then when he's still on his escape, he finds his back where he was. Yeah, so it's like that.
Huh? You didn't get it?
No, you wouldn't get it anyway.
So their idea, if the Lord doesn't have a goal, then he cannot be creator. It means they don't even get on the pranamaya level. It means if it's not selfish, nobody would do anything.
They're saying in the material world everybody does like that. And that's what creates all the problems. So he's beyond that. So he wouldn't create this world, it just creates problems. But the reason it creates problems is because the living entity wants to enjoy separately from the Lord. So you can see here is that even though they're so intelligent to be able to give such fine arguments, they themselves, without understanding the relationship of the jiva with the Lord, then they actually don't have real knowledge. And so because the basis is not real knowledge, no matter how expertly they use their intelligence for fine argument, it's still all wrong. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the whole thing. It's just like, let us say the kid brings their, you know, toy, that big car, you know, toy car that you can sit in and drive around in, and they're supposed to use it outside, but they bring it in the house and drive around in the house, knock things over and all that. So is that good or not? No. Now, what happens if they got themselves a Ferrari or a Lamborghini? Much more sophisticated, more developed like that, costs a huge amount, you know, very prestigious and that. Then he comes, brings that in the house and drives around inside the house. So is it better? It's more sophisticated. It's more that. It's a Ferrari. You know, it's like that vase of yours was knocked over by, you know, a Ferrari, not by that, you know, funny little kid's toy. Not so you're feeling better now? No. Okay. So that's the whole point, is just because they use really nice intelligence, you know, very technically, the logic. They're very detached, they're very renounced, you know, very knowledgeable. It doesn't mean that it's any better than any other materialist. It's just that because their basis is still, they want to be the controller, they want to be the enjoyer. They still, by attaining to the getting liberation, they become God. And why do they want to do that? So that they'll be happy. So they're maintaining it, just takes on a different form. So it doesn't matter how technically correct they use logic and how fine a points that they bring out, it's still wrong because the basis is wrong. Like Prabhupada says, you have a big mathematical calculation. If at one point one of the functions is wrong, all the others, even if they're done correctly, are still wrong. So that's what's happening with all these schools, that even though many of their technical, mechanical things that they apply are correct, that's why we'll use them from their schools, but the basis on which they're using them, that's totally wrong. Like, you know, we saw, did we go through it? No, we're still going through it. And the personified Vedas Prabhupada was talking about all the different schools. So just their basis is wrong. So even though if Gotama's logic, that all the schools use that. Everyone accepts the concept of that everything's from atoms. That's discussed in the primary creation. The avyakta is about the atoms, right? That part. And then you get the Mahatattva, now you have things that have been put together. Right? Like that. And then Shankya, the analysis that the universe is made out of elements and all that, then that's well accepted. You know, the yoga process and that of doing that, then that concept of that, that's also well accepted. And the idea that you perform activities properly, you'll get proper results and all that, that's accepted. And then the elements of how Vedanta works and all that, and its principle of establishing transcendence, that's also accepted. But the problem in all these six schools is they don't accept the personal feature of the Lord, you know, that eternal personal feature of the Lord, and the eternal personal feature of the living entity, and their relationship of master and servant. Right, so the bottom line is they don't want to be the servant. They want to be the master. So they haven't been able to get it by material ways, so they're going to go for some other. And only Jaimini then has that faith that, no, it's just where you haven't been only doing pious activities. If you only do pious activities, you only get good results. Therefore, you'll be happy. Right? But the problem is since it's the modes of nature and all that, everything, every action is covered by fault. So there will be some suffering. And even if you don't, you do everything so perfectly, what will the material benefit, benefits of, you know, all positions and society, all the opulences, what will that do for the soul? Nothing. So still they'll be dissatisfied. Right? And because they don't know the personal feature, then they'll go into, they'll be impersonalists also. Like that. So that's the problem that comes here, is even though they give these very, very nice arguments, it's always about establishing the position of the Lord. Because in here you see is they don't argue point for point. They argue the point connected to the Lord. So they're establishing, the first point is that's made is about how he has senses, but they're beyond. Because they're part of a sarup. Once you understand that, then now you can say he doesn't have material. Because we say, oh, he doesn't have material senses. Yes, he's impersonal. So always establishing that personal position and the position of bhakti. So always in a discussion, if you're not doing that, then it's just argument. And it has no value. So that's why we're not interested in just, you know, logic and debate and all these things. We don't mind discussing, as long as it's establishing the Lord. But if it's just defeating that someone else is wrong, their logic is wrong, or they've used the example wrong, so what? Since when is logic so important? Right? But we'll value it. No, logic means intelligence. Intelligence is higher than, you know, regular karma, so therefore I'm intelligent, I know the logic, so I'm superior to, you know, other people who are not in this category. And then amongst those who are intelligent, I'll try to establish myself as the most intelligent. But if not, I'll respect those others, because most of them I'm more intelligent than. Right? So you always see it's about establishing the Lord. So sometimes they'll say, no, but they're not arguing technically the point here, because that's not how you win this argument. Because if they don't at any point understand their relationship with Krishna and his position and our position, then it doesn't matter how technically you argue, they'll just use another one. You know, like they did here. We remove that one, they just come up with a different angle. You know, we've seen up to now, we've been going on for many, many, you know, these padas, and they just keep shifting their point. Because the whole point is they're voidous. You know, so they're just trying to get rid of everything. And so they don't mind using anything, because ultimately it doesn't matter, because it's not there anyway, so.
In case of those who are not following Karmakanda, so they are like living a life of animalistic life.
When you're talking about these schools, or you're talking about just general persons?
Comparing.
Okay.
So similarly, these people are accepting the shastras.
Yes.
But the conclusions they are.
So if they're practicing human life, but they're only practicing on these levels of manomoy and pranamoy, so on the philosophical and on the intellectual platforms, they never get to anandamoy. They talk about it. Mayavadis always talk about the anandamoy platform, but they never get there. How can they get there? So that's the point. They don't even understand what Brahman is. So it's like this. If God has no form, and him having a form is material, then, because the shastras then say, is Krishna, you know, makes the point that the Brahman is situated on him, his personal form. So if that personal form doesn't exist, neither does Brahman. So what does that leave you with? Right? You've given up the material, so all you have is void. And what philosophy is that? Buddhism, right? So that's the point, is that they're just voidists. Right? Based on the Vedic authority, so they're humans, but the conclusion is atheistic. So their own position can't exist. So why would a Mayavadi actually get liberated? How could they? Because if you're going to merge into Brahman, you say it's the supreme, but that Brahman is based on the person, but that person doesn't exist, so your goal doesn't exist either. Because they can say whatever they like, but we're talking about the reality. Why would Krishna give them liberation if they don't actually accept the position of liberation? Right? Now, for a Brahmavadi, they understand everything's Brahman, so they don't see that it's illusion. Maybe we're in illusion that we think it's not Brahman, so that'll be similar like what we'll say. But they only know Brahman. So only knowing Brahman, they don't know what's above Brahman. But so if there's, you know, a discussion that Krishna is there, they'll accept him as Brahman. You know, and that he may be supreme Brahman. It's all Brahman. So Brahman can have variety. It's just all Brahman. So for them, they could merge into Brahman, because they're accepting that Krishna's form is Brahman, and so therefore that being the basis of Brahman, then there's no problem in them merging into Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But it doesn't mean that it'll give them an eternal result. No, it'll still be a temporary result. Because the concepts of Brahman and Paramatma are concepts that are only practiced in the material world. They're transcendental concepts, but they only apply in the material world. Spiritual world, you don't need to do that. Why are we discussing Paramatma and Brahman? To become self-realized, so we can understand there's the spiritual world. Now, in the spiritual world, they're already self-realized. Why do they need to understand Brahman or Paramatma? Right? The Lord's right there in front of them. So he's not localized. He's localized that he's there in Vrindavan or there in Dwarka. But the point is that's him. It's fully him manifesting all his vibhutis. While Paramatma only manifests how much is necessary to do his interaction with the living entities. He's a complete person. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because he's only manifesting how much is, interaction with the jiva, then he's called localized. So it's just there in, the individual situation with that particular jiva. Like that? Does that make sense? Or that particular atom, or, like that. Well, Krishna is interacting with all the devotees and all the pastimes and all that. So that's Bhagavan. Okay.
So when in those prayers, when they are glorifying the all-pervasiveness as everything,
right.
So means they are coming from Krishna to his energies.
Yes, yes. In other words, Krishna through his energies is all pervading everything. So those energies we see, then there's a going out and their impersonal feature through as Brahman. Right? Because if it's the effulgence of his personal form. So that means it's the effulgence of his qualities.
Yes.
So that means Brahman also has, transcendental qualities, no mundane qualities. So that energy of Brahman, that's just transforming and you get the material manifestation. Is that something? Yes.
Maharaj, so among all the class of thinkers, only the Brahmavadis go till Vijnanamaya stage and then Anandamaya for Vaishnavas? Because
no, they can get up to the beginning stage of Anandamaya. But only them, these Mayavadis and these others, the highest they can get is Vijnanamaya.
How Vijnanamaya? Because Prabhupada defines in this before that Vijnanamaya is to know actual nature of the soul.
Yeah, the actual nature means that's the act full. But they know that they're the soul, not the body, this, that. So they can get that effect. But only Vaishnavas get the full of it, just like Anamoy. The engagement of the senses, only Vaishnavas know actually how to engage the senses. Pranamoy, that all the other living entities and the social, only Vaishnavas understand that. And then Manamoy, the Dharma and what you're supposed to do, only Vaishnavas fully understand, because they're all part of bhakti. They're the secondary aspects of bhakti. Or even supporting secondary aspects. But the point is they're part of bhakti. While those who don't accept bhakti, they're trying to operate in those as if they were full and complete. It's like trying to make a full meal out of, samosas or something. not even any chutney. Just samosas. What I'm saying? No water. No, just samosas. Right? You can try, but at some point, the taste and that, throat's going to get dry and all this, and then you'll come up with a philosophy about that. And a technique, you just eat a small amount at a time and all this, and then in this way you eat your samosas over an hour and a half period, then that way you won't choke. Right? But then problem is later, then you're going to get so thirsty, it's ridiculous. But whatever. So only when you understand the completeness of it, then it's all there. Right? Does that make sense? So if you're talking about, prashadam, and it happens to be, let's say, a snack or a breakfast, something like that, then it's the whole meal. So that whole meal in relationship to the Lord, that's bhakti. You know what I'm saying? If we're just accepting the meal without the Lord, or just part of the meal, without the Lord, then it just gets down, and then that's where it's natural. So someone is, taking that as the whole thing and trying to make it complete. Someone else has got dinner as the whole thing. Someone else has got lunch. Someone else has the afternoon, at 4 o'clock, the little what happens there. And like that. But at least it's within the tradition. But they're only taking parts. Right? And then when you step outside of the Vedic version, then you have, mixing all kinds of weird things. Samosas and milk. Shukta and chutney. These are your Western philosophers. You know what I'm saying? So the samosa originally comes from the original thing, the chutney also, but they, the shukta, they just mix here and there because of whatever it is, you know. You know, all that pollution from the traffic, sitting on the sidewalk, drinking your coffee, right? So all that, and you know, all that toxicity, then, you know, they don't think so good. Yes?
That is an example of bhakti being the complete meal. Why do you say Western is what?
Sorry?
In the example of bhakti being complete meal, and you said Western is mixing non-Vedic things. So why do you say like fasting? You want to do complete fasting? You want to avoid?
No, it's just that, okay, let us say, no, this is going to be hard. Okay, you're a roti walla or a rice walla? Roti walla, okay. So now, let us say, like at lunchtime, at lunch, could you have, let's say, we'll find also, let's say, like Corella, right? Now they might take that, stuff it, and deep fry it, right? And then it would be a side thing. It wouldn't be the main. You know, and you're going to have a dry subject and a wet subject. Okay? You're going to have dal. You're going to have so many things, right? But now, let's say at dinner, you're not going to have all those. You're going to have your rotis. There's a good chance you might just have roti and subject. You know? You won't have the dal. You won't have so many things. You won't have all the... Right? Yes? No? Yeah. So... there's a difference between dinner and lunch. Right? Now let's say breakfast. Then let's say you have like a paratha. It's not necessarily going to be sabjis or dal, but you might have some yogurt. Right? With some masala and stuff like that. Huh? Yeah, like that. No? So, what we're saying is that these different levels of consciousness, they're not understanding the whole diet. It includes, in other words, Vaishnava is the whole diet, so the whole diet of the whole day, including all the seasonal ones and special occasions, that's all the Vaishnava diet. These other schools, then they're taking just lunch, and they're trying to make that universal. You know, lunch at breakfast, lunch at the 4 o'clock, lunch at dinner, lunch, you know, the same lunch, if it's a special occasion or not, it's always lunch. You understand? So someone takes lunch, someone takes dinner, like that, you know, does that make sense? It's like that. So what we're saying the Western is they'll mix things from different meals. It won't be complete. You know, it's just like, so you'll end up with, let's say, the yogurt and that from breakfast and the Corella from lunch. Okay? That's Western philosophy. So in other words, if you know the six schools, you know all the parts of philosophy. And so in the Vedic, they're put together in a natural kind of groupings for different mentalities. You know, human mentalities for following the Vedic culture. But the Western with a non-Vedic, they'll come up with combinations of these same elements that are not technically human. And so they'll be kind of strange combinations. Does that make sense? It's not that they're not made of the same elements. That's why if you know the six schools, you know philosophy. There isn't anything outside of that. And if it is outside of that, it's probably not useless at all. Not useful at all. You know? Does that make sense? You know, stuff like, you know, babies up to the time that they speak, they actually have all the universal knowledge and all that. They're on that, you know, all-knowing principle. But then when they somehow or another start talking, that first word, they forget everything and just become a baby. So these kind of philosophies aren't so important. You know, or you come from the future into the past, and then you procreate yourself, you know, that you'll be born then so that you'll exist in the future. Right? Yeah. So, that's the problem with the Westerns. They take all these elements that are, you know, may have some position, but the whole point is they extend it to points where it has no connection at all. Well, if you give the actual position, they'll say, oh, that's just, that's mythology, this, that. But they'll base their lives on these other things. Right? You know, you have, you know, Star Trek or Star Wars geeks. Their whole life is about that. They talk about that, they do this, they're on, you know, like this, they go to big conventions, they dress up, they have this and that. But if you tell them, no, but this is actually what it is, they say, oh, that's the myth, you know. You know, we're logical, we're scientific. It's like, yeah? You understand? So that's the problem, is that people just mix and match as they like. That's why you have to follow the Vedic. Then at least it falls into some structure. And then from there, then you can go, like here, they accept the Shastra. They accept the process of logic. So then you can discuss. But if they don't accept Shastra, then why are they going to listen to you? That's why you see Prabhupada in his purports basically just uses logic. Because they don't accept Shastra. Hmm? That makes sense. Yeah.
When the Mayavadis see that Brahman has no senses, and then they aim, they aspire to merge with the Brahman, so are they not fearful that even they will merge into Brahman and they will lose their senses? So it's
no, they're not. Otherwise, why would they be practicing what they're doing? You know, it's like you have sometimes these weirdo people who think that you know, how do you call that? Not atheists, not agnostics, anarchists. They always have this idea that the humans have gotten off the track so much, away from the natural, that if we get rid of humans, then the world will go nicely. You know, so they don't mind getting rid of everybody or even killing themselves, because it's all for the higher good. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't think that far. If they thought that far, if they were that logical, why would they be impersonalists? Why would they be Mayavadis? Why would they? Because there's material attachment. That's why they don't see things as they are.
Mm-hmm. Because the entire purpose is either to be the controller or the enjoyer.
Right.
If losing the senses, one is neither controller nor the enjoyer. That's a good thing.
Yes. But does attachment use logic?
No.
So then, why are you expecting them to? You understand? See, it's because you're taking that intelligence is the topmost kind of thing. But the point is intelligence, Krishna explains in the Gita, when there's material desire, then that intelligence becomes covered. Right? So their intelligence is covered. That's why it says Mayaya Apritigyana. They're very intelligent people, but in the areas of their attachments, they can't see things as they are. Right? So that's just going to be there. It's not that intelligent. By intelligence, you can't know the Lord. It's only through bhakti that you can know the Lord. They don't have bhakti, so why would they actually understand things as they are?
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
And regarding this particular thing about that, when they say that he has no goal, so can the Vaishnavas say that the Lord has the goal of compassion in material creation and the prema for the spiritual world?
Yes, but then you have to explain that whole. You'll have to explain that whole thing. Is that then that's based on them accepting that God is there, is the eternal. The soul is there. They have a relation that's based on bhakti, and that's the natural position of the soul. So are they going to accept that? So then you can't use that at this point in the argument. You just have to defeat that particular point they're making. Then what you may try to show that. We're going to say that, but it's not necessarily you can use that at this point. I mean, you can say it, but whether they'll accept.
No, they won't accept.
Yeah, so then why bring it up? So Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-22-23. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed towards all living entities. Therefore, no one is very dear to him, and no one is a great enemy for him. No one is his friend, and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world, he has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred, He has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, For him, there's no question of distress.
Distress and happiness are relative in the sense here?
Yes. Because we'll take happiness as nice, distress as nice. But on the spiritual platform, the you know, basic anubhavas and sanchari bhavas of happiness and distress are all ecstasy. Because it's all in connection with something. Right? It's just like, is there a situation, you know, just as an example, where someone's so happy they cry?
Yeah.
Right, so the whole point is crying is seen as a distress. But because of the situation of its connection with something that's important, you know, that has that emotional importance, therefore the crying is also taken as a happiness. So in the same way in the spiritual world, then seeming distressed and all that, because it's in connection with the Lord, it's all just bliss. Is that what it is? Yeah.
So the vipralamra itself is a...
Yes, that's what we're referring to. Okay.
Well, relative here is also for individual jewels. Somebody is happy in a situation, but somebody is in distress.
That's there, but they're relative to each other. It's just like, okay, right now, let's say yesterday. You weren't here yesterday. Were you here yesterday? No. Okay. But yesterday, then it was, at this point, it was 27 degrees. So the fans were running. Why are the fans running?
Everyone's feeling hot.
Yeah, because everyone's feeling hot. Right? And so you put the fan on so it makes it cooler. Today, it was 25 degrees. The fans aren't running. Right? But you don't see everybody wrapped up in chudders and all that either. So that means that this point is no distress. So therefore, there's no endeavor for the happiness of turning the fan on. Then when it gets colder, that will create distress, so then look for the happiness of being warm. You understand? So they're related. Happiness means removing a distress. So at this time, it's pleasant, so no one will even think about it. You know, if you think about it later when it's hot or cold and you go, oh, this time of the year is actually quite nice. But at the time, it's not like this is special because there's no distress. So therefore, there's no happiness. If you're not hungry, does the food taste good? No. Just like if you've just had a full meal, you're completely, you know, satisfied, full, packed, stuffed, whatever. And then I come along with your favorite preparation. Are you interested? No, you're self-satisfied, right? How do you say? Yeah, renounced, you know, transcendentally situated. Right? Does that make sense? So, it's only, but the hungrier you are, the better something tastes. Like, you notice that you're super hungry. The first few bites, it's like nectar. And then you want to continue that, and after a while there's no taste, and you wonder what's going on here, you know? Did they change something when they cooked it, or what, you know, what happened? You know? Somebody said, yeah, so that's the point. Is as the duality is less, the happiness is less. So the more hungry, the more taste. The less hungry, the less taste. Not hungry, no taste.
That's why they say that when you sit on a diet, you gain more after.
After, yeah, because then you really bad. Yeah, everything. Oh. Yeah, that's like, yeah. That, yeah.
Maybe, Maharaj, that's what all the restaurants make you wait for 1 hour.
Yes, and then you'll think that, yeah, could be, yeah, because then you'll... Yeah, because everything's there. It'll take them 30 seconds to go like that. Oh, what's that? You put the pan on, throw it in like that, you know, a little bit like this, and then it's done.
Some people don't become angry too much because time is...
Yeah, but then angry when they do get the food. Then now. Yeah. Okay, Bhagavatam verse... Oh, no, we were reading that.
No question on this.
Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no
okay. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress according to karma, And although no one is his enemy or favorite, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of his material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death, right? Because it's through the dualities that we look. Why are they trying so hard for their impersonal philosophy? What's the motive?
To enjoy.
But why are they inspired in that way?
To be God.
Okay, yes, that's there. But why not just do like everybody else is doing? They're also engaging their senses and trying to enjoy. They're smarter, but then in their smarter, I mean, do we not have the people who are smart and good at karma? Right? So these people are smart and good at karma? They're not good at karma. They're just smart. That's why they're better. And that guy that's super smart and super good while he's sitting on his yacht there with having a party, what does he think of all the smart guys that don't have all this? Yeah, so then everybody's... Yeah, so the point is that they either are suffering or they're able, smart enough to see the suffering that's there. So in that way, they don't want to get involved. Why get involved? Because all this suffering comes. So therefore, because there's a distress, they're looking for happiness. What's the happiness? Then the impersonal. That's why all these philosophies, then always it's always that impersonal voidistic kind of thing. Right? Because if you say impersonal, it's not enough. So therefore, it's void, there's nothing, so then there's no problem. Right? So it's still based on the material duality. That's why for the Vaishnavas, they give up this duality. That's why they're not worried about happiness, distress, you know, justice, injustice, all these different things. You know, nice, not nice. They're just looking for how it's connected to Krishna, pleasing Krishna. Because if it's pleasing Krishna, then he's happy, you're happy. Because in the transcendental platform, it has nothing to do with the secondary aspects.
Yeah. Even though we know that, still, because of the attachments and the imperfections, we know, theoretically, that we're looking for, not for the good, but for whatever is pleasing to Krishna. But we cannot separate ourselves from what's going on.
But that's habit. It's just because that's what we've been doing. But with time, then you see it's not a problem. Like with, is it Madhavendra Puri? That famous prayer, goodbye to my 3 days bath. And
Yamunacharya.
Yeah, so it's just, at some point, it's that they're so absorbed in Krishna. See, because like you take your 3 times bath means you there's a certain time you take them, and there's a certain ritual that goes with it. But it's not that he says goodbye bath that he just sits there and, you know, doesn't take bath, he just sits there and scratches all day. And, you know, that's cool. So it's that he's so absorbed in Krishna and that he doesn't even notice what time of day it is. So if you don't know the time of day, how do you take bath at the 3 times? You understand? Same with the Gayatri. It's not that he's not absorbed in the Lord. The Gayatri is just so you are chanting, remembering the Lord. But he'll be so absorbed that he won't know the timings to chant. You understand? So it's not that, sometimes it's thought, oh, see, they don't follow rules. No, they're so absorbed in Krishna, they don't notice the situations in which those rules are applied. But if you're noticing the situations and then avoiding it, then that's not pious. But here they're absorbed in Krishna. The purpose of those pieties are to remember Krishna. They're already remembering Krishna. That's why they don't need to perform them. But it's not that they could and they don't. It's just they're so absorbed, they may not. And then times when they're aware, they will. You know, that's why you see the Goswamis, they would sleep, you know, an hour and a half a night, if they remembered. But if the conversation was going so nicely and they're so absorbed in Krishna, they'll just talk all the way through until morning, you know. And then it's time, then they'll do other things. Yeah, just like that, yeah. Okay. So Krishna creates these dualities because those are the effects of the mechanics. And since we've taken the mechanics as all in all, therefore, then we suffer in the duality. Right? So it's variety, but through duality. Well, in the spiritual world, then it's just variety. It doesn't give a dualistic effect. It doesn't matter what it is, it always creates that ecstasy in connection with, it always creates bliss. Right? But the material world, because bliss means Krishna. Krishna is, he is Anandamaya. So therefore, because we don't connect to Ananda, then all we're left with is the mechanical. And the mechanical, the variety is the duality. And so in the spiritual world that gives bliss, and here, then it doesn't, because you're not connected with bliss, which is Krishna. So when you connect this to there, to Krishna, then you also aren't experiencing the effects of it. It doesn't mean that it's not distressful conditions, but it's ones then you remember Krishna. And so therefore, then you're always absorbed in Krishna. Footnote 44. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Lord is impartial since the jivas are liable for their own happiness and distress. So then the doubt comes up. But if the Lord is equal, why does he make one person happy and cause grief to another? Right, because they only look at immediate. No one wants to look that you did something wrong, right? Even though he's equal in all circumstances by the transformations of his Maya Shakti, the sequence of beginningless karmas arise from piety and sin creates happiness and distress. The meaning is this. Even though the Lord creates happiness and distress, since the Maya Shakti belongs to him, and in the sense he shows inequality, he does not create happiness and distress, since Maya is not his Swarup Shakti. Thus the Lord is actually equal to all. He doesn't do, Maya is creating that. He's simply given the principles. Because in the spiritual world, from his Swarup Shakti, when you're absorbed in that in relation to him, these don't create happiness and distress. They may have the external symptoms of that, but they're only creating bliss. Right? They're only creating another. So Maya is just taking care, and it's just, you've done this, you get this, you do that, you get that, that's all. Similarly, the universe of Maya is a form of the Lord, but because it does not arise from a Swarup, it is different from him. Right? So his Swarup is his direct Shakti that he interacts with. Then the shadow of the Swarup is the external energy. So the external energy is doing all these things, so since it's part of his internal energy, it is him. But at the same time, as he is a person, he only interacts with the internal. So in that way, he's aloof. It's different. Though the sun appears to be unequal because he gives sorrow to the owl and the night lotus by its rays, and gives happiness to the Chakravaka bird and the day lotus, no one says the sun is partial. Sardarta Darshani 6:17-23. It's just that these living entities see it that way. Right? So for the owl, they move at night. Right, and the night lotus also at night. And so therefore then when the sun comes up, then these two, the lotus closes and the owl goes to sleep. But then the Chakravaka bird, then they become happy with the sun coming up, and the day lotus, then it blooms. Right? So it's just the sun is doing what it does, the individuals that they interpret according to their desires, their nature. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shula Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jainatai Gaura Premanandini.